Welcome to Let's Talk Land, a weekly land education talk show devoted to learning about land and farms, buying and selling, ownership, especially for real estate agents and realtors. Learn from the experts. Free land education. Hi, my name's Lou Jewell. I'm an accredited land consultant with United Country Real Estate Sutton Properties, our new company name, along with my co-host, Teresa Martin, one of our agents. Hi, Teresa.
Hello, Lou.
One of our guests, buying and selling homes, land or farms in Western Piedmont, North Carolina, or Southern Virginia, give us a shout. We'll help you out. Our new office is at 102 East Main Street, next to BB&T in downtown Pilot Mountain, North Carolina. Please make a note of our changes. Our new company website is www.allsuttonproperties.com. That's A-L-L-S-U-T-T-O-N properties.com. Just a program note, Dr. Barbie asked the doctor show will now follow this show and will air at 10 a.m. Our guest today is B.K. Haynes. Welcome, B.K.
Oh, yeah, good to have you as an announcer. I haven't been on the radio for a number of years, but if I can help you with any information regarding the land business, go ahead.
Well, you're going to be a very important guest today because you got your license back in 64 and you're spry 85 years old. So you've been practicing real estate about my whole adult life. And I know you've got a lot of experience. You went to George Washington University where you graduated, and you got a very special title, Virginia Land Specialist. What is that?
Hello?
Yeah, what is the Virginia Land Specialist?
Virginia Land Specialist is a variation of the ALC. ALC, it's an accredited land consultant. Is that what you're referring to?
Yes, sir, it is.
Yeah, okay. That's the Virginia. That's not as active as it used to be, but it's still in existence. I was president of that when they started back in, I guess it was the 90s. I think it was 95 I was involved in.
What was the requirements for that?
Let me see. That was, if I'm not mistaken, that was for Virginia Land Specialists. It was mainly for ALC people, but other land brokers would attend our meetings, and then they'd be encouraged to apply for the ALC.
So you were also part of the Realtors Land Institute, which is our coveted institute that been around, let's see, we're on 76 years now. That's a national organization for land realtors throughout the country. And we have 10 courses. I'm honored to be one of our instructors. I teach the Land 101 class, two-day class, 16-hour class. And you were also president of Virginia Realtors Land Institute back in 93. And you got the 93 Land Realtor of the Year Award. Congratulations on that. You were regional vice president of Region 2 and 4 for RLI. You cover Virginia, West Virginia, Maryland, Delaware, D.C., Kentucky, Tennessee, North Carolina, South Carolina. That's quite a territory.
Yeah, it is a large amount, yeah. those were the good old days. I haven't been as active recently as I was in those days. I was writing books and giving speeches and had a radio show and everything. So I think back over those days, and I was grateful to you that you brought me back into some degree of activity here.
We're gonna keep you going, BK.
Well, thank you very much.
And I think in your senior years here, you've authored several books. Actually, the first land book, and they're quite rare out there. I think did some research a couple months ago, and there's only like 12 titles. On land specifically. There's hundreds of titles on real estate, and I've been to the bookstore several times in the real estate section, and you go pull a title and you go to the index looking for the four-letter word land, and you might find two or three books that reference it. So it's very rare, but you've written three books and working on a fourth one now, I believe, that I want to talk about today and give your overview of what they are. Okay.
I think four of them were real estate. I did two books on real estate advertising. I mean, land advertising, mainly conceptual type advertising. But that was in the book, the recent book. But if the Amazon has a couple of books on there, if somebody's interested in promotion, advertising, they can go to Amazon.com and order the books called Adventure, whatever, Adventures. Yeah.
Right.
So that was a big part of my work in those days was promotional. I was in land development, primarily in rural land areas. I understand you were also a developer.
I've done over 60 rural subdivisions in North Carolina. We have the 10-acre rule, and as long as you subdivide 10 acres or more, you don't have to get the government involved. Pave roads and go through
20 acres,
mostly 20 acres
up here, yeah.
So I've done quite a few of those. Like, people say they're not making land anymore, and I said, well, I've been making it for years, creating product. You know, the 10, 20, 30 acres are the most desirable investment tracts. And, you know, it's hard to sell these big 200 and 300-acre tracts. But so if you break them up, you know, you've got obviously make more money because less acreage is more per acre and more acres is less. And plus it keeps that inventory chain going.
What I found happening up here is that people that I sold land to back in the 60s and 70s, they now I'm reselling this stuff. They bought the land, and many of them flipped and made a lot of money, and others have built homes on it. So right now we're going to a second degree of sales for this original group that came in here, the culture group in those days.
Yeah, talk about how land has changed, the marketing of land, the pricing of land, the buyers, the typical buyers, the financing of land has changed over the years.
Yeah, financing mainly is just ordinary conventional financing is probably 80%. You know, they'll finance 80% of the deal. Is that what it is down your way?
Yeah, pretty much the same. Farm credit is our go-to lender.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, owner finance deals, people like to get those, you know, whenever they're available.
So how has the market changed all these years?
Well, like I say, the market's in a transitional stage right now. we'll be dealing with, anybody in the business, I'll be, you know, not too active. But it looks like anybody that bought land back in the 70s, 80s, they would be, mid-30s or not in that neighborhood. They'll be out here looking for land that they can use to commute to the Washington area. And there's an element of the populace that is concerned about recreational activities only. But they're still out there. But the trick here is when we hit 2020, that's the end of a 40-year cycle, 40-year business cycle. And they seem to be running like clockwork. Every 40 years is a major change. So people, depending on where they are, what they have to offer, would have to adjust themselves to any change that's coming up. And so sometimes it would be a major recession or depression, which I don't think is going to happen. But something of significance culturally is going to occur. In 2020, it's already started, and so you want to anybody in the land business is going to have to adjust to that. But I can see that if they bought land, I don't see how they could lose on it. Even though maybe 2030, maybe there's a recession or something like that. But if they can hold it for 20 years, they can, you know, double, triple their money, I would think.
Right. Teresa, you got a question?
Yeah, so would that make it a good time to sell or buy right now?
Say again?
Would that make it a good time to sell or to buy right now if it's at the end of the 40-year cycle? I mean, what do you see coming up? Or
I'm afraid I couldn't hear that. Maybe there's something wrong with the sound.
I think it's the system. I think we're having problems with the system. Can you hear me now?
Yeah, I will just repeat it for you. She's just saying, with 40-year cycle, is this a good time to buy or is this a good time to sell? What's your opinion?
Well, that's up for observation. I guess we'll have to wait to see what happens with the election. Obviously, if it becomes a fact that there is no recession, obviously you'd move in a different direction. But I would say that everybody ought to be, you know, on the alert that something is going to happen in 2020 of a significant nature, since it seems to be the same from 1900 to say 1940. You know what happened, you know, the Depression, these wars, and then from 40 to 80 and so on, Depression. And then, of course, the next big one was the 60s. The 60s seemed to have lasted a long time, and that faded into the internet area of era where 1980 to 2000. Of course, that's a 20-year period, but that's also for something for people to understand is when you hit this 40-year cavern, so to speak, where something, you can leap over it or fall down in it.
Right.
There is a midpoint in every one of these dead cases. Every 20 years, something happens. Maybe not as major as the 40-year cycle. So if 20 years, I guess people are going to be a little hesitant to do anything until they see what happens on the elections in 2020. Then after that, people can make major decisions on what they want to do.
Right.
Right now, I don't think there's going to be a tremendous rush of people out in this area like there was when in the era where we had 2011, was it 7/11? Yeah, okay. 2001, was that when it was?
Right.
In New York, the state, the United Nations buildings were hit. That was a midpoint. See, that was significant. People rushed out of the city to get land out of the city, so we wouldn't be subject to any hazard like that. So anyway, I would say that people might be a little unstable right now because they want to see what's going to happen. But once the election occurs, then they can make major decisions.
Right.
So I don't think that this fall is going to be a masterful time for buying or selling land. People's just going to hold back until next year, and then they'll have a better idea of what's going to happen.
All right. Well, that was interesting. I mean, I agree with what you say, the 40-year thing. I've sort of seen that in looking back into history and its definite cycles.
So, BK, we're going to take a break here. This is BK Haynes. This is Let's Talk Land. I'll tell you, the first book I bought, which is the first book I believe you published, was How I Turned $50 into $5 million in Company Property part-time, and how you could do the same. Hardcover is published in January 15, 2004. It's a comprehensive volume on buying and selling country property for profit. The book was designed to help anyone with basic education make profit in real estate. So how did that work?
Well, it worked fine. I was, at the time, I think I did some, I had written a couple of screenplays, and I was concentrating on that, and I moved away from real estate for a little while. But in that book, I tried to answer any questions that people would have who didn't have any basic foundation in real estate, but if they wanted to make some money, how to do it. And so it shows them how to write the ads, how to buy the land, how to score a land, whether it's a good deal or whether it's not a good deal. And as I say, I broke it down into decades, what happened in the 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, 2000, up to 2001, something like that. And so the basic information is there for people wanting to invest in real estate. But to go out on your own without any education in real estate is a haphazard thing to do. You really need some foundation in real estate. And I did start out. I didn't have a license, but I had a feel for land and then sort of developed things as I went along. I was basically a rider, but prior to that, I was into horses. Ran a riding stable for a while. But anybody who wanted to get into real estate, maybe they'll find it, useful, like you did. Maybe it helped you.
It did help me. The principles in that book, even though you cover many decades, they haven't changed. The basics are the basics. You know, location, you know, quality of property, assets, water is important, even more so today, internal water as opposed to riparian water. You know, timber, that's a cash asset. That's extremely important in evaluating purchasing land. And, of course, if there's covenants on it, protective covenants, I like to call them. People call them restrictions, but I like to use a better, more positive word, protective covenants. You know, all of these things need to go into valuation of property. And then what are you using it for? Why are you investing it? Isn't this what you're finding, Teresa, with the people you're dealing with?
Oh, yeah.
Well, let's see. The book was actually written for, you know how people are making money these days, flipping houses?
Right.
And that's a big trend right now.
It is.
Investing in real estate, I think it's a significant move at this point in time if you make the right decisions, because people are in such a difficult move. In other words, they really don't know what to do because the culture's changing, and so they can stabilize their financial situation by focusing on the value of the offer. What can I do with this, and how can I make money? And I think that's what people are, rather than just coming out indiscriminately buying land like it was in the recreational land boom of the '60s, where people had enough money in their pockets that they could go out for $50 down, $50 a month, and pick up a piece of land. And a lot of developers made a lot of money in those days. You know, your profit was 7 or 8 times what you acquired the land for.
Right.
But now, I think the focus would be on, is this a good investment? What can I do with this in the future? Rather than, I want to just have a pleasurable place in the country. They've got to make a good deal at the outset, and they got to somehow be justified that they're making a good investment. And in fact, then it comes back to the agent. The agent has to produce evidence that whatever he's selling is going to have a significant value in the future. But remember, in those days, people were selling timeshares, and they were selling land in Florida, swamp land, and then now I guess they're still selling desert land, which has no significance.
Right. Yeah, I know.
But just like that.
Yeah.
So in the book there, of course, we have points. You know, you score them. Water is important. Views are important. Price and terms. I give 50% to that. Location, I give 10%. And if you can get 70% or above, it's a good deal. So that would be the guideline right now in this period of indecision. Is if you're going to buy land, make sure it's a good deal. How do you make sure it's a good deal? Well, one way you could read this book, and the other way, another way would be to find a good land guy who understands land and can show you evidence that it's worth more than what they're paying for it. Now, I told you earlier about Elvis Presley back there. He died at 42, and he paid $102,000, something like that. But that was in 77. And I was around in those days, too. But that land's probably worth three or four times
aside from the fact that Presley bought it at a good price, you know, but there are deals up here in the valley and down where you are and all over the place that have unique qualities about them and would score high if you use the scoring system similar to what I have in my book.
Right.
So that would be my guideline for consumers to concentrate on the value and the potential reward you will come from buying the right land at the right time in the right place. And that calls for a good agent. And guys that know land, they know the deal better than real estate agents who just deal with houses. I don't fool with houses that much, but so that's the key right now is concentrate on the value end of it. And if you want it for pleasure, just watch what you pay for it, you know, because can you resell it for what you bought it for?
Yep.
And how long can you hold it?
Yep. I always, Teresa and I, and my students as I teach around the country, I always say that, you know, you need to look at selling the land, not buying the land. You make your money when you buy it, but you also need to know how to get out of it. And that's where the highest and best use principle comes in, being able to subdivide it using road frontage for lots, liquidating it in pieces as opposed to a whole. Sometimes you can make better. Or for estate planning, for inheritance purposes, how many people's in the family that's going to be subject to the inheritance and taking the land and proportioning it to equally for those heirs and coming up with a plan to put in your file so when that day comes, the laws don't change that much with land, that you've got at least a base plan to work from to liquidate the property. So you wrote another book, too, Script and Flame, A Recipe for Proven Success Rules, revealed by a self-made millionaire. And then it says, A Treasure Scroll of Golden Success Secrets Revealed by Self-Made Millionaires to Help You Gain Financial Security, Social Unity, Accurate Thinking, and Spiritual Enlightenment on the Road to Riches. No need to spend your time and money on expensive courses, seminars, or deep stacks of books to succeed in life. When the manifesto in hand is committed to your memory, you will be armed with the most powerful written weapon now available for archivers. So tell me about that book. Tell Teresa and I about that.
Well, if you don't have those 16 rules, it doesn't make any difference how much money you make. You can see right now in the media reports on what's happening, people with lots of money, and they don't have the basis like the 16 rules, which is like, you know, the 10 commandments in as far as how you conduct your life. But without those 16 rules, you're going to falter somewhere. And those 16 rules, I've examined them up and down the pike, and this is not a biblical type book, but the principles of the 16 rules are inherent within the Bible. So, but anyway, that's what I would suggest that they do. And anybody building like an estate or something like that, as far as their financial techniques that they have or inclinations, they probably should not quibble too much about the price of a piece of land. If you buy that piece of land and it joins your piece of land that you already have, and it makes your land, in other words, your profit does not come by the few thousand dollars difference you may have in negotiating the price. The profit is built in the future when you sell the estate.
Right.
You see, a lot of people don't look at that. They want to buy something next to them or adjoining them, and they argue and they quibble, and they get to a point where they say, no, it's worth this, and this is, I'm not going to pay anymore. But if you look at it from the other perspective, what's that property going to do for my estate? Is it going to make my estate more valuable? That's where your profit is, not immediate price profits that you can get, and you're not going to sell it anyway. It could probably be worth much more if you build into your estate. So this information is for people who have land and they want to buy land next to them or around them, if it doesn't have any significance to your estate, it doesn't help you. It's like somebody buying land, but they don't have a riverfront.
Right.
And then they say, well, I got a piece of land, joins the river, joins your land. Well, and then you can't quibble on the price. Well, what is it worth? Because it's a farm. Now it's a riverfront farm. It's different. So don't quibble over that. Just make a good decision. But that's part of the financial angle connected with dealing with real estate. But it also works the other way, where you don't want to pay more than you need to for a piece of land, because you don't know whether you're going to make a profit. So dealing with a good agent who follows the ethics of the real estate business and avoids fast talk artists, hotshot land salesmen like you used to have, who sell you a piece of land that's not worth anything. So that would be key, is find a good agent. And so I'm sure that you and the people you're associated with are going to level with the customer and tell them, not sell them bag of wind and nothing in it, but air. Anyway, that's what I would suggest that people do when they are negotiating for land.
To reinforce that point, the Realtors Land Institute that you've been a member of for years, and I'm still a member of now, which is the land realtors in the United States. There's only about 1,300 of us. I think there's 1,000,003 realtors out there, and we're a very small group, but we're a very unique and dynamic group of people that love land and are educated, highly educated through our courses. Our website's www.rliland.com, and you can go on there and find an agent anywhere in the country. And specifically, you want to try to find an accredited land consultant like myself, and you have been, BK. And there's about 550 of us of that 1,300 that carry that designation today. So we are truly the land people in the real estate industry. Yeah, we sell houses too, some of us, but that's not our passion or our love. Our passion and love is land, farms, and ranches. So if you anywhere in the country you're looking to buy or sell land, you definitely want to go to that site and identify one of the RLI members, and specifically an accredited land consultant. So just briefly, BK, what were some of the 16 points?
Well, the savings habit, self-confidence, self-control, concentration, cooperation, courage at old age, particularly courage. A lot of people get older and they lose courage, but that, I've emphasized the elderly part of that, because people have courage, youth, but maybe it fades away as they get older. But courage, going more for the money, the golden rule, imagination, pleasing personality, patience, tolerance, profiting from failure, leadership, definite chief aim, accurate thinking, going the extra mile, doing more for the money, practicing enthusiasm. Those are 16 basic rules that they would fit anybody's life. And if they're going through life and they say, well, wait a minute, do I have control over my emotions, or am I can somebody cause me to blow my top anytime that they want to, or can I control my emotions? Self-control, it's important. A lot of people don't think that you did this to me, so I'm going to do this to you. Revenge, hate, all these things. The book wipes it out. Say, don't, accompany these negative thoughts. So it's all there in the book, and it's I read the book every day. I mean, I wrote it, but I read it back every day just to keep it evolving in my mind, And it works, because I don't flare up at anybody or argue with anybody. I don't like people argue with me and things like that. And of course, savings habit. That's not a good habit that I have, because I went through $5 million and nothing flat, but. Savings habit is important. It's very significant. How you do it is another matter.
BK, this is our guest today, BK Haynes, and this is Let's Talk Land.